Hi, I'm Niv.
Hi, I'm Martin.
And we are Asteroids in Exile. Lights, camera, action! So welcome to episode 8. This is going to be a very interesting and shorter episode than normal, which is currently the theme that we're going with, because we had a lot of issues today that we had to sort through before actually getting to this episode.
Yeah, it's Issue Sunday.
Issue Sunday. Welcome to Issue Sunday. So maybe that's how we kick it off. So putting all that aside, what we want to talk today is mainly about Doctor Strange, right?
Yes.
So now that we've both seen it, we can get into the details and the nitty-gritty about what we thought about it.
Yeah, so beware of spoilers.
So we're actually not going to worry about spoilers here. So we're going to go and just talk about everything. So if you haven't seen the movie yet, go watch it and then come back and listen along.
We should do commentaries at some point. I want to see people at the cinema listening to us talking about the movie.
That's a good idea. Maybe that's one of the ideas we can do for season two,
yeah.
So one of the things I was thinking, actually, is that we should just throw it out there. If anyone has any ideas for what they'd like to see for season two or hear for season two, to let us know.
Yeah, please.
So we've got various social medias. So yeah, just, you know, send us a message about what you think we should be doing. And we'll try to get on that.
Yeah. Asteroidsinexile@gmail.com.
And we've also got Twitter, right? So that's just...
No, we haven't got Twitter yet. So. The name's already taken.
What? Oh, no.
Yes.
No, we must declare war on whoever's got... Who would have that? That's such a strange name, first of all, without the context of...
Somebody who wants a ridiculous amount of money for the user.
Are you sure we didn't set it up and then forget that we had it? Like,
no, that can't happen. No.
Right.
My brain's not Switzerland, or Swiss cheese rather, full right. of holes.
All right, well, there you go. We don't have Twitter, but we've got pretty much everything else. So yeah. Instagram, Tumblr. There's a Tumblr.
There's a Tumblr. We have a Tumblr, yeah.
But which we don't use, right?
Do you post anything? It's an auto post. It just posts episodes there.
Okay, cool. All right, well, use that forum too then. Or just hit us up on our individual accounts.
Yeah, we're out there. Asteroids_Hopkins. If you want to reach... Oh, I'm so sorry. I mentioned me first. If you want to reach me on Instagram, and at Exelen if you want to reach Niv.
Yeah, at gmail.com. So, all good. Cool. So, Doctor Strange, you want to go first with what you thought about it?
Should I go first?
Yeah, you go first.
Okay.
You were so excited by this.
Okay. It's my least favorite Marvel movie so far, to be honest.
Really?
Really, yeah. It's a visual feast, especially the sequence when he gets sent on the trip by the Ancient One through the multiverse. That thing is worth the price of admission alone, but you can leave the cinema afterwards, in my opinion. I think that this movie is something that made me worried for what comes next, because, you know, even before it started in Europe, and we got it earlier than the US, I think, there were already mentions of how Doctor Strange will factor into Infinity War and other Marvel franchises.
Yeah,
and that already got me worried, because it was the bulk of the talk around the movie and not the movie itself. And I kind of see why, because it's a weak movie. It's probably the weakest Marvel movie, weaker than Iron Man 2 to some degree.
Very interesting that you say that. I mean, I really enjoyed it. I'm like almost the complete opposite of what your thoughts are. I thought it was fun. I thought it had a very hopeful message. I mean, I agree that it was a visual feast. I thought it was just a really good job on like the effects and just the imagination of how they put it all together. And I thought it injected a lot of new kind of freshness into the Marvel universe. So I'm really looking forward to like where they go forward with it. So I really want to hear why you think it was so bad. Like what parts of it? Like, so you, I, so the first trip, right? So when the Ancient One pushes him through and they go through that trip through the multiverse and you just see all that. You just see everything.
Yeah.
That was so cool.
Yeah, that was amazing. That was amazing.
That was amazing. Yeah, and it was kind of sad that they used it so early on. Like, it was quite... It was in the first half of... Or the first third of the movie even, right?
Because that... When they flee through the mirror dimension version of New York City and Hong Kong, that looks amazing as well. I mean, just the kaleidoscopic imagery was amazing.
Yeah, the thing with the New York sequence when they were going through the mirror dimension, I think because we saw it so much on the trailers.
Oh yeah,
and we already compared it so much to like the Christopher Nolan influence. It's for me, it wasn't as impactful. I think, we'd already seen that so many times that we were like kind of expecting it. And then it didn't go any more deeper than what they showed us in the trailers, I think. Whereas we'd only seen little cuts from that first trip, which is his first trip through the multiverse.
Yeah.
And when we finally did see it in an extended sequence, it was just phenomenal the way they put it together. And it got super psychedelic. Like, it was an acid trip, effectively.
Yeah.
You know, like the hands with the fingers on the hands and the fingers, like just sort of the whole world kind of fractaling out into just that weird, you know, like acid trip, effectively. Yeah. I was the one thing that I wanted more from the movie was I would have loved if they had like a Pink Floyd type soundtrack to it. Like they should have really just doubled down on that 60s psychedelia.
They had a sound, they had a song or a remix of a Pink Floyd song in there, but I'm not sure which one.
Oh, really? I didn't pick that up. So one of the things, I mean, I need to go watch it again in 3D.
Oh.
Because I showed up to the movie like 15 minutes or 20 minutes late, expecting that there was going to be trailers, but the cinema that I went to, I forgot, doesn't actually show a lot of trailers. So I missed the first, like, maybe I would have liked a little bit more of a slowdown, but it was, you know, if anything, it just kept me engaged through the whole story while I tried to sort of keep up with what was going on. So what happened in that first, like, first 15 minutes, I guess?
Well, we see... Caecilius, thank you. We see him tear the page out of the...
Oh, right.
The Book of the Vishanti? Is it mentioned? Oh, shit.
I think they do mention it, but I can't remember the detail what the name of the book was.
And he beheads the former librarian for whatever reason, and he doesn't really get set up. The only setup is that Mordo mentions that he lost his family and all the people he loved, and then there's this monologue when he fights Strange in the New York Sanctum,
right?
And that's it. And I just remembered the Pink Floyd song is Interstellar Overdrive that they used.
Oh right, okay, cool.
And you didn't miss much the crash scene, the car crash scene. There's a phone call he has with his agent, and he lays out some cases for him, and one of the cases is an army veteran who got his back broken when he used some experimental armor.
Mm-hmm.
So the movie could be, oh no, it can't be set in Iron Man 2 because we see Avengers Tower in an establishing shot of New York, but that doesn't matter.
Oh right, and it could be
after the first Avengers movie, perhaps?
War Machine.
Ah, it could be War Machine, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
After Civil War, yeah. Yeah, and he looks at some X-ray pictures of a girl who's a heart implant? A pacemaker, but a pacemaker for her brain, and she got hit by lightning. And he looks at the X-rays he gets sent, and he drives too fast on a slippery street and then gets off course.
Right. And that's what causes the car crash.
The car crash, yeah.
Okay. So that's effectively where they're establishing him as a kind of an egotistical, greedy doctor. Right?
Not really. He's established. He's not really established. And that's another problem. People say that he's egotistical, but he's actually, I mean, he's an idiot, but he's not an asshole.
I love that distinction.
Yeah. You see him perform surgery, and afterwards he gets night nurse. I forgot her name. Mm-hmm. Rachel McAdams' character asks him about an X-ray about a patient of hers, and he diagnoses the patient with he has a bullet stuck in his neck, and another surgeon wants him as an organ donor, and he says that it's a bullet encased in lead, and that it's actually he's actually paralyzed because of lead poisoning, and gets the bullet out, but he's not an asshole about it. He actually helps her when in the original first issue, we see comic book, we see Dr. Strange perform an operation and mentioning something like if the check doesn't come through, he'll undo the results of the operation, basically.
Oh, right.
So he's
more of an asshole.
Yeah. Yeah. He's unpleasant to be with, but he has your back.
Is the way they've established him in this movie.
In this movie, yeah. He's not really unlikable. He doesn't go full Sherlock.
Because, I mean, or like full Dr. House, right? Because that's effectively what I was expecting, is that he would be Dr.
House. The House, yeah.
I mean, you know, part of that character arc and what makes Doctor Strange so interesting is that he does sort of have that turnaround and comes to a realization that, you know, he is meant for more than what he was doing, and that, you know, the life that he was living wasn't actually the way he should have been living his life, right? So that was part of the interesting character arc. So it'll be interesting just to see how they sort of put that together. I do plan on rewatching the movie. I saw it not in 3D.
Oh man, see it in 3D.
So I have to do a 3D viewing now.
Yeah. That's probably the only movie that justifies 3D.
Right. So what else didn't you like about it then, just in terms of like the way the character was portrayed, or
like I mentioned earlier, I would have liked to see more of a character journey for him.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like. I thought that Night Nurse was underused. They could have just used the second surgeon and do a buddy relationship between them, and that they grew apart from each other over time. You know,
right?
Shake things up.
You're calling her Night Nurse. Was she actually the Night Nurse character? Because isn't Night Nurse established in the Defenders universe?
Yeah, but...
Or the Defenders
storyline? Her character is Night Nurse in the comics.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's the same character?
Yeah. Well, the same name. They share the name. But I guess that Rosario Dawson's character will be established as Night Nurse.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the critiques about Rachel. I think it's Rachel McAdams playing... She plays a very good kind of girlfriend character, and she doesn't actually do anything more than that.
Yeah,
which is what I guess happened here. You know, she was a very good sort of supporting girlfriend type character, but as Night Nurse, who needs to sort of have a bit more agency, I'm not sure. I don't see this character going there. I don't know.
Christine Palmer. Oh man, I have my memories shot today. Her character's name is Christine Palmer.
Right.
Yeah.
What about the effects for the rest of the Marvel Universe then? So what was your thinking there?
You know, I fear that Doctor Strange will be a bit too overpowered, because magic has, in my opinion, not been probably established. There are no rules or understanding of it, because all they do is they perform Kung Fu and it summons magical weapons.
Yeah.
Did you stay for the after credits scene?
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, how does he conjure up the keg, the beer keg for Thor? He doesn't even. I mean, he lifts a finger, and to summon a magic whip, he has to do all these elaborate movements, and you know, everybody talks about how magic screws with the boundaries of reality and opens up the gates for Dormammu and everybody else. And now Strange is going along and breaking the rules left and right.
Yeah.
There's no distinction what flies and what doesn't.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I mean, but with the one caveat that you talked about is they kind of also left the door open for him to technically be able to do anything. But what was interesting is they only really showed his power in terms of like being able to conjure the weapons using some mystical, or what do they call them in the movie? Some relics, sort of magically powered devices. So the cloak being one of them, Mordo's boots being the other. And then, you know, Mordo also had that sort of that bow staff stick thing. And they had those, I can't remember what they call them, but like the interdimensional portal ring things. They look like
sling brass. Ring, sling ring.
Yeah, sling ring.
That was ridiculous as well, yeah.
because the rest of the fights, I mean, even though there was magic involved, kind of did work very much in the physical plane, you know? It came down to a lot of like actual fisticuffs.
Yeah.
And I think what was interesting was that even the bad guys, I mean, they conjured mystical weapons, but those weapons still kind of behaved like they were physical weapons. So the air blades or the air spears or swords or whatever it was that Mad Mikkelsen's crew had, and then the same with Doctor Strange, because he just had that rope thing, right? That was kind of his key weapon. But I think as they go forward, you're right. You know, I think his powers are going to grow. I think being able to sort of conjure more beer into the Stein.
Oh yeah,
is maybe at, you know, how his power grows over time. But I think they're going to have to be very careful with what could be considered as just magic tricks, like doing, you know, a beer Stein that doesn't run out, compared to actually using magic, where he's going to have to do something that's going to be a bit more reality altering potentially. And I think that's where you get that distinction between where he has to use his finger work. And, you know, summoning spells, I guess, compared to just doing something on a whim.
Yeah, but then we're in the Marvel Universe. Why not make magic a superpower? Because how should I put it? With the time gem or the time stone, he got that neat heads-up display on his wrist.
Yeah.
And why didn't they transfer the whole act of magic into something like that and make his background as a surgeon factor into that he can shape reality in that way as a surgeon, precise. And you know what I mean? We have all those great mandalas that he can summon,
mm-hmm.
and all the shapes. Why not? I felt like they had all those cool tools but didn't put them to use, at least not in that movie.
Yeah. And I think it is kind of balancing what you're talking about. I mean, they established magic, and I think, you know, in Thor, even in the first, is it the first Thor movie?
Yeah,
where Thor says that all magic is just, you know, advanced science. And I think that's really how they've established magic in this movie as well. Or that's, you know, they just sort of continue that and taken it to the next level. Because even when the Ancient One is explaining what magic is, she says it's effectively understanding the source code of the universe and then hacking it, right?
Yeah.
Which is effectively all those mandalas are doing. And what was interesting with the time gem, finally we see an Infinity Stone used in a kind of consistent way and in a very clear way for what it actually does.
Yeah.
Because all he used it for, and so potentially all it does, is able to control time, right? And only like to be able to forward, rewind, and create those time loops. So maybe it can do other stuff, but I think even with the way they explained what the Infinity Stone was, it was very clear that it can only do a certain amount of things, you know? So some of the other Infinity Stones are super vague. Like there's no idea what they can and can't do. Like the Mind Gem, you know, it could do so many things. It gave powers to the twins. It brought Vision to life. What else can it do? You know, is it sentient? Is it not sentient? I don't know. So this was the first time it was good to see, like, first of all, the Infinity Stone was just clear, so everyone knew it was there. Because they actually said
it gets mentioned.
It was sad to me that it was mentioned without any sort of ceremony. Like Wong is just like, oh yeah, it's an Infinity Stone, you know. But he didn't like say, maybe you want to sit down while I explain this thing to you, you know. So us as the audience can also understand sort of what's going on with the Infinity Stones. But I think I like that physical approach to the way they put magic into the universe and also made it consistent with everything that's happening on the science bros side of things. So, you know, when you're talking about Iron Man and Bruce Banner and all of the stuff we've seen so far, this now fits in as a layer on top of that. It doesn't actually break anything that came before, which I think works out really well. So,
yeah, but
for me, it opens up more dimensions to how you can use the story.
Yes, yeah, like, of course, with the multiverse and stuff, they went big because so many threats have been, and possibilities have been uncovered.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, it'll be interesting too, just so as we now sort of go towards Thor Ragnarok, where does Thor's version of magic fit in with this? If magic is advanced science, who's actually more advanced in that way? Like, is Asgard more advanced than Doctor Strange's magic and the ancient knowledge, effectively, that he's using? Or is that ancient knowledge even more far ahead of where Asgard is in terms of their understanding of technology and science? So to me, that's going to be an interesting one, just to see how those two work together, you know? Because Doctor Strange kind of skipped a step, you know? You could potentially say that Asgard got super advanced because they kind of had to develop research and discover all of these things, whereas Doctor Strange didn't have to go through that process. He's just learning how to now manipulate and use it rather than putting in the work of the thousands of years that Asgard had to actually work it all out, you know? Yeah. So he doesn't have to show his working. He can just skip ahead and find the answer, you know? So yeah, so I'm really excited to see how, you know, the two of them fit together in Thor Ragnarok, because that was the implication at the mid-credit sequence, right?
Yeah.
Is they go off on a quest, or he joins the quest, and everyone in the cinema got super excited by that when I saw it too. So I think that's gonna work out well.
Yeah, I hope, especially, I mean, it's not set in stone how long Doctor Strange will be in that movie, but under the direction of, and I'll butcher his name, Taika Waititi, it'll be especially interesting to see what could happen.
Yeah. So, I mean, just on the Thor movie, I'm really liking the approach of having Thor as more of a comedic character. I think Chris Hemsworth seems to work better as a comedian than a serious action hero, you know? So I think even the best scenes in the first Thor movie is like when he's just that fish out of water,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
The one where he's like in the diner in the small town. He's like, this drink is great, get me another, and then smashes the cup on the floor. You know, there's just small things like, and he goes into the pet shop.
Yeah, and wants to ride a hamster. Yeah. It was amazing.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and again, it's just the delivery. It's just being able to sell the joke. And I think with Doctor Strange, that worked. Like, I was actually surprised by how funny this movie is. Like,
really?
There was some, I thought, yeah, I wasn't expecting it to be so humorous.
I thought it was too much
at
certain times. Yeah, especially with Wong. Even if they didn't make Wong his manservant, he's still the butt of a joke, basically. I mean, they even let him die, and Strange brings him back. That was so disappointing.
I mean, he dies because, like, that's the Hong Kong action sequence,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
and then Strange reverses time
and
stop it.
Brings him back to life, and that was so disappointing to not see him, you know, at least lying there mortally wounded, but not dead after being the butt of a few jokes.
Which jokes didn't you like about Wong?
You know, the whole when he tries to, you know, he mentions all those single named artists and tries to force a smile from him. And then I mean, when he steals the book while Wong is listening to Beyonce, that was actually funny. But the whole thing beforehand, I like the exchange they have when Wong tells him, you know, the former librarian has been beheaded, but that fate won't happen to me because I'm too good at my job and I'll probably behead all the people that are bringing in the books late.
Yeah.
That was funny. That established Wong as a badass. And then you have all those fun lines. And when he stands in Hong Kong, oh, that's funny. Oh, God. You know, oh man, it's just you could have easily done that to another character and have Wong in fewer scenes, I think.
Yeah, Did you think it was offensive, or did you just
not
think
offensive,
that
just
handled Wong badly?
Just misused. Just misused. Not offensive. I thought that Tilda Swinton's use as the Ancient One was far more offensive with the possibilities that the movie opened up, because all you had to do was tell, you know, have Benedict Cumberbatch mention her looking like some New Age bookseller, and then have another character mention that she looks like something else, and then have, you know, the camera pan around her and truly make her an interdimensional being, so to say, and even, you know, show her as a Skrull for a moment, and implicit that the school is populated by more than a few Asian guys, Benedict Cumberbatch and Baron Mordo.
Yeah, I mean, for a school in Nepal, it was a pretty pretty low on general Asian attendees, I guess you can say. It was a very international cast.
Yeah.
But at the same time, look, I think just on Wong, I think the way they portrayed the character, to me, wasn't that bad. And actually, I enjoyed the Wong sequences. I thought he came across as quite quite a well-realized character in some ways. Like, he kind of like had that sort of hard-edged kind of, I don't take no nonsense from no one, and I have no sense of humor, but then showed that he did have a sense of humor. So,
I'm sorry, we didn't, when we had the chance to see him fight, the only thing we got to see was his corpse and his resurrection.
Well, and that was potentially a wasted opportunity. It would have good to have seen more action out of Wong, like to establish that he's not just looking like a badass, but he can actually fight like one too, right? So
they should have had him in the New York chase.
Yeah, but didn't he run off to London or something?
Oh yeah.
So I mean, to be fair, it did have a lot of characters.
Yeah,
it did have a lot of characters to balance, and I think having too many characters in, if you had the same characters that were in the New York fight that were at the end of the show, at the end of the movie, it would have just been like a repetition of the same thing. So I think it did add a little bit of variety just to see different people in different places. But obviously they could have done a lot more with him. But I think, I mean, the amount of screen time they gave him just in those quiet moments, to me, those were pretty good. I mean, I already said the movie moved so fast. Like, the story progressed at such a pace that having those quiet moments where, like, it was just Wong in the library listening to Beyonce was actually, like, I saw that coming, but it was still hilarious when it happened, you know? Because I'm like, he's going to be dancing to Beyonce in the next scene. Yeah. And he was, you know, pretty much.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, yeah, it's a fine balance between kind of making him look like a Charlie and actually, you know, showing how good he is. Because, you know, you could almost say that, you know, being the keeper of the librarian, he shouldn't have been able to be tricked so easily. But at the same time, you know, what they could have done was probably shown him, allow Doctor Strange to think that he was tricking him, you know, so not to make it look like he was completely taken out of.
Yeah, but then I think showing Strange's determination to become good at studying magic was actually something that fit the character. You know, as you mentioned earlier, that he starts to realize that he can be of use in some other way, in another capacity.
Yeah, and I think Wong sees that in him too. I mean, Wong's the one that lets him into the private reference section of the library, right? So so that was cool as well. Like, you know, Wong being able to see that, you know, he's got something there that's worth developing. Well, so I mean, I think Wong was handled well. I think Tilda Swinton as the Ancient One, I mean, it was a little bit of a smack in the face when they had that bait and switch, because they had an Asian guy sitting there, and Strange obviously thinks the Asian guy is the Ancient One, and then the Asian guy's like, no, it's not me, it's the, you know, it's the white lady behind you.
Just keeping the seat warm.
Yeah, so that was kind of like a slap in the face. But I think one of the cool things that I liked about the way Tilda Swinton played the Ancient One was just, I mean, you can see how good it is when you've got good actors in those roles. I think they brought, I mean, both Benedict Cumberbatch, Tilda Swinton, and Mordo.
Yeah.
and Caecilius. So I mean, I can try to say his name.
No, but I don't dare try to pronounce it.
Who's gonna call him Mordo from now on? I mean the acting was just really good, and that line where which we've seen in the trailer as well, where Mads Mikkelsen, Caecilius, is calling Doctor Strange Mr. Doctor.
Yeah,
he comes in, and Strange says, "It's strange," and he goes, "Maybe, but who am I to judge?"
Yeah,
that was just brilliant. It was done in such a deadpan way. It was done with both sides just being like, "This is so confusing." Well, this is so stupid, but this is not the point of what we're having this conversation for. And we're just going to go ahead and have this fight. It was brilliant. I thought the delivery, the execution, and just the commitment that both sides had to that, to those kinds of jokes was awesome.
But it's so sad to see Mads Mikkelsen get so... He gets only one scene where you can see why they cast him when he's... bound by the harness, and he talks to Strange, and that single tear runs down his eye, or his cheek.
Oh, that was great. That was awesome.
And you know, instead of having him behead and the librarian in the first scene, why didn't they just do a short vignette of how he got to the temple and into the care of the Ancient One? I don't feel Caecilius's pain.
Yeah, I mean, what was good about that? Like you said, I think we don't have a full understanding of Caecilius's pain and why he's doing what he's doing. But having an actor in that role, that moment, that scene was so subtle, the way they played that tear. It just shows, like, even though we don't know the full story, we know that there's enough of a depth there that we can believe the character's motivations, you know, so it doesn't come across as two-dimensional.
Yeah.
And I think it was just small things like that which really made the movie, like those small moments.
But it would have been more satisfying if Strange found a way to, not condemn him to live eternally in the Dark Realm.
Well, that's kind of it. I mean, at the end, he doesn't live eternally in the Dark Realm, does he? I mean, they actually die. They get their life force sucked out of them, and I'm pretty sure their bodies kind of turn into, like, ashen, withered frames.
I thought more that they'll become mindless ones or whatever, or slaves to Dormammu as a token. I interpreted that scene
right.
In that way.
Is that what happens in the comics?
I'm not sure what happens to Caecilius. I'm just right. Brushing up on my Doctor Strange knowledge, but it's been years since I've read classics Doctor Strange.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I thought effectively that the irony of the whole thing at the end was that there was no eternal life because effectively you're going to die now, and go to your master, you know, which I think is a fitting end for that kind of storyline. So. Caecilius gets what he wants, but at the end of the day, you know, he doesn't truly understand what it is or what the cost is.
But, you know, he because Doctor Strange complains about having killed a person in the astral body fight was amazing as well.
That was great.
But he complains about having killed a person when he swore an oath to save lives wherever he could. And then he condemns Caecilius to death instead of finding a loophole for him. I mean, he doesn't need to get redemption or something similar, but at least keep him in a magical prison or a box or something, you know.
Yeah.
Grant him eternal life, but under Doctor Strange's conditions.
And I think that was part of what the story was about, you know. And I think it was setting up that rift that's now coming up between Mordo and Strange. Which is Mordo does or did have that very idealistic black and white view of right and wrong. But the conversation that Strange has with the Ancient One is all about how sometimes you need to bend the rules in order to enforce them. And I think that's where that's coming from as well, is that she effectively tells him, you know, to have this role as the Sorcerer Supreme and to sort of be able to hold the world together, you need to be able to be flexible with some of these things. And I saw that as effectively what he did at the end. Because you're right, you know, he was struggling with the fact that he had to kill someone, and he didn't want to do that again, and he was effectively saying, I'm out. But when he gets to that point, and when he has that, when he gets the opportunity now to actually save the world, he strikes a bargain, you know, and I think that is... that is representative of the change in him as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, there was a great, there was a really great scene that he's willing to die over and over again, so others can live, if only in that moment.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great way to resolve that, because I mean, how else are you going to fight a god?
Yeah,
you know, because that's effectively what Dormammu is, right? It's like a universal entity. It's like the Phoenix Force or like or Galactus or something like that. So. The only way to defeat it is to trick it, you know. And I think it was successfully done, and I think it was a good end. I mean, otherwise you're going to end up with just like a really off the scales battle sequence that's just not going to make any sense or not be very believable to anyone.
It was a great end because it also showed us that Strange is not on the peak of his power, because he would have if he hadn't. He used his brains and not his brawns.
Yeah.
He used magic as a scalpel. So there were some surgery references in there.
Well, there you go. I mean, he was, instead of continuing that fight against Caecilius on the ground in Hong Kong, he actually goes into Dormammu's realm. And like you said, he uses magic as a scalpel because he effectively brings time into a place where time doesn't exist, right? So that's the Eye of Agamotto. So... Agamotto? Agamotto?
Agamotto.
Agamotto. It's my Boston accent. Agamotto. All right. The other cool thing, I really loved the Cloak of Levitation. I thought that was...
Yeah, it was a nice touch.
That was cool. I loved that it didn't talk and it didn't like squeak and make noises, but when it was trying to talk to him, it kind of pulled him in the direction it needed him to go. That was hilarious. I loved how it kind of wiped his tear like out of his eye as well with the collar. It's cool when they can bring personality to the inanimate objects like that. You know, it wants you to want one.
Yeah.
It makes you want one, you know. And I want one of those. I mean, that was cool. He also used it interesting ways. Like, can he use it to fly in the normal comics? I don't think he can fly, right?
He uses it to decrease when he's decreases speed when he's falling, but he can teleport. He doesn't need to fly in the comics.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's cool as well. So that's also probably going to come to Thor, to see him be able to teleport around. So.
Yeah, without a pair of knuckles, hopefully.
Well, I think it was almost like established that you need those things to be able to open the portals, because even Caecilia says that, you know.
Yeah.
Or somebody else says, you know, you don't come into the mirror dimension if you don't have your sling ring, you know. So I think, again, it's just that from a story point of view, I think they're building in those checks to make sure that Doctor Strange doesn't become too overpowered. Because if he becomes Dr. Manhattan, then the character and the whole dynamic of the universe changes. You know, if he can do anything in altering the source code of the universe, then what can stop him and what can he not do?
Yeah, and we had that already in the comic books. At some point, he beat Galactus.
Well, and then, I mean, right, he beats Galactus into submission with where they're building to with Thanos. He could single-handedly take on Thanos. So there's no need for the Infinity War because he could just show up and resolve it. So I think, you know, they're trying to legitimately depower him in those ways. Otherwise, you know, it'll just be too easy. You know, all the Avengers show up and he's like, don't worry, guys, taken care of. Let's go get kebabs or pizza or whatever. It's all done.
Everybody ends up with a stein in his hand.
So, no, I think overall, you know, I thought it was super enjoyable. I would have liked it to have gone a bit slower. I'm just happy that it fit together so neatly in the rest of the universe that Marvel's created. And it's now sort of opened up so many other doors that they can play around with. And just seeing that character... the way Benedict Cumberbatch plays him, interacting with Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man and the rest of the team, I think there's so much of potential for hilarity.
Yeah.
And just all these interactions. I mean, they did a really good job to paint it, even though it was just the first movie. in a three-dimensional way where you can almost imagine how he can interact with everyone yeah. else now, which is, I think, something that some of the origin story movies tend to not do very well. But this one, I think, because they know that they need to get to Infinity War so quickly, you know, they were playing fast and loose with the time gem, with Thor coming in at this point, saying it's an Infinity Stone, you know, and actually like showing us all that stuff because we don't have time now to like sort of explore side stories. Everything needs to come back
yeah.
to the Infinity War storyline.
On the other hand, it is a bit frightening to think that they have to shift into a higher gear now from taking their time. I don't know.
No, I agree with, I mean, I understand what you're saying. I think that's the challenge with the Marvel movies, right? And that's probably what pissed Joss Whedon off as well when he was doing Avengers 2.
Yeah.
Is that there was all these things that have to get done at certain points in time. And so Marvel movies are not so much about the artistry of creating a standalone piece of art, you know? It is in service to a larger story, and everything needs to fit in service of that larger story. So the fact that they can create something that is as original and unique by itself as a movie with Doctor Strange, but also fits so neatly into the larger construct in itself is an achievement. And I think that's what excites me about it. Because I wasn't going in expecting Doctor Strange to be something that's going to be like completely out there and different and be like something so totally unique from an artistic point of view. I was going in to see how does this expand that universe? Because at this point, it's all about that universe. Like it's the individual characters are also in service to that universe, you know? So, and I think I'm personally okay with the fact that they do have to just, because I'm a very plot driven person. I think I need to know that that everything's going somewhere. And we talked about this with Westworld as well, you know, and why I can't stand shows like Lost. If there's no point, if the story's not going anywhere, I'm almost not interested in it anymore. But if it is going somewhere, if all these things are like, now we're effectively like running to the finish line with the Infinity War, that's what excites me. Like, I want to see how it all comes together and how they've built the overall picture and not just the individual movies. But on the flip side, I mean, it is, you can say, sad that we're not going to get a, you know, like a 1960s art piece that exists on its own for Doctor Strange and the Age of Psychedelia and all of that. But at the same time, that would not fit into the rest of the world. So, you know, it would be a disjoint thing. So I think they couldn't go probably as, you know, they couldn't crank it up to 11 with what Doctor Strange could be if he existed in the world by himself. And that's part of the challenge with it. But the way they put it together, I'm extremely happy and excited by it. So that's where I am. I mean, I think it's awesome.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Were you like, would you have been more happy if it was just like a standalone Doctor Strange movie that kind of cranked the dial up to 11?
No, I'm okay with the story and with the path they've taken. I just feel like, as you've mentioned earlier, so many things have to be mentioned, have to be shown, have their place in canon. And while we always hear that movies are a different medium and not everything from a comic book can transcend the barrier into the movie, it's forced. But in Doctor Strange, it almost feels forced into the movie. You know, with Christine Palmer and Wong and the Ancient One, all those things, while brilliantly acted, of course, felt forced to me. I felt like watching a checklist happen, and I didn't get that in Phase 1 and Phase 2. Not as obvious.
Yeah,
yeah, and that's what's bothered me the most. Or Mordo's leaving at the end instead of being the snake in the garden that Strange is establishing with his reign as Sorcerer Supreme.
Well, that's an interesting one. I mean, I think you're right in that sense. I mean, I think Mordo's turn was too quick as well. And again, you know, from a plot point of view, I mean, I like a fast developing plot, but that's, you know, that's maybe too quick. I think the snake in the garden analogy is a good one. I think it'll be cool if Mordo doesn't turn into a fully fledged bad guy or villain just yet, but is doing this sort of dark power gathering on his own in the background while still maintaining a false kind of relationship with Strange. And that probably goes through the next one or two movies, and then he establishes himself as the major villain. So maybe like he's just sort of doing things in the background for the next, for the near future.
Yeah, I hoped.
Well, he's collecting them. Because, I mean, again, you know, in terms of service to that larger universal storyline, Strange has to now contend with Loki and Thanos coming up, right? So I don't know, you know, when is Mordo gonna fit in to that? And so it might be down the road. But I think that there are some parts of it where you are correct. I think with Dr. Christine, they could have potentially changed the character, just had one more other doctor who was his friend to serve both of those roles instead of having two doctors that he had to sort of deal with, you know? But at the same time, I'm thinking, you know, from a movie point of view, you need to have a love interest, you know, you need to have a female love interest otherwise.
Really? Is that so important?
I think it's important because it's expected. And sometimes, like, these movies are formulaic, right? If you look at the high level, if you look at the story, these movies are formulaic. From a hero's journey point of view, you know, he needs to have the girl. He needs to get the girl in the end. And so he kind of gets the girl in the end.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't there, the conversation would be completely different. If it was another male doctor, it would be kind of like, is it a bromance? Is it like a gay relationship they were alluding to? Just like how you're playing into with Steve and Bucky now,
yeah,
in the Captain America side, right? And so it's almost like even in that movie, Agent 13, so she was put in there, you know, and that kiss, that felt so forced. Almost to like say, hey, I know the Steve and Bucky thing is getting a little homoerotic, but he does like girls, you know? So you get into those situations, and I think it's just easier sometimes to just say, look, that's not the main part of the story, so we'll just have that character in there because it's expected. You know, it's a part of the tradition of how these types of stories work.
Yeah.
You know, it's like having a dragon slaying story, but there's no actual dragon.
Yeah.
You know, it's a computer virus that he has to go kill in the end. You know, it's like,
it would have been so nice because you didn't see that scene when he's operating on the guy with the bullet in the neck. He tells the other surgeon to cover his watch because it distracts him. And I thought if they had, you know, just a good friendship, and when he's on the table later and the doctor would be injecting the adrenaline instead of Christine, and his astral body would just come out and say something like, could you take up off the dreadful watch when you're rescuing me? That would have been funny as well. You know, it would have worked both ways, I think. But now that you mention it, perhaps we're not ready for movies without that are non or skip a part of the formula.
Yeah, I mean, the formula exists for a reason.
Yeah.
Kind of, and the way movies work as well, you know, these types of movies specifically, and I think that's why movies like Batman and Superman didn't do or weren't so well received, is people go to see them to get a certain level of fulfillment and satisfaction, which is served by the fact that they know the good guy's going to win and that the hero's going to get the girl,
yeah,
and that effectively everything will be resolved by the end, right? And whenever you break away from that formula, you need to be careful. So I think you either do it because you know exactly what you're doing and you're trying to make some commentary to subvert the genre or to like play around with it and, you know, point out a specific argument that you're making. But if you just try to do it badly, or if you sort of do it just for expediency's sake to sort of save costs or save on time, then it becomes a glaring omission.
Yeah.
You know, and then people start to wonder, like, well, that didn't satisfy me. You know, that movie was crap. And then, you know, then it's when you get, I mean, not so much from a review point of view, but like word of mouth and your the money you're able to make back goes down as well, right? And so sometimes it's bad. Like even in Guardians of the Galaxy, I thought the relationship between Gamora and Star-Lord was forced. I didn't like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't like that the most deadliest woman in the universe is falling for Star-Lord's tricks after he read the game, you know? So, you know, it's things like that. Just didn't, you know, because they were playing Guardians of the Galaxy on TV the other day, and yeah. I rewatched parts of it again. And yeah, just like small things like that just annoyed me about that movie. It was a lot of fun, and like the Rocket and Groot parts were my favorite. But every time they sort of did that sort of kind of relationship type storyline with Gamora, and every time they went out into space without spacesuits, it just shitted me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, the helmet protects them, yeah, yeah. And what's Gamora has bare arms.
Well, yeah, and then space you go out into arms. Space twice. They didn't even do it like one time, and you're like, okay, I can forgive the one time. They did it twice. That's what annoyed the hell out of me. But anyway, I mean, yeah, so from a story point of view, I think, you know, you need to have that character in there. I mean, so it would be better if she was the only character that he was trying to redeem himself to and not the other doctor as well. And I can't remember the other doctor's name. It was like Nicodemus or something.
Yeah, yeah, Nicodemus
West.
Yeah.
So I think that was, I mean, potentially Nicodemus West was in there because he does, like, that character becomes a villain, the Doctor Strange lore, right? So, like, in
yes.
canon at some point in time. But at this point, I don't think it was worth to introduce him. So, I don't know. I mean, and Benjamin Bratt was in this movie as well. Who was Benjamin Bratt?
Benjamin Bratt was in this movie?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's the guy.
Was he the basketball guy?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, he was the basketball guy. I thought that was him, but he looked very different. So, I mean, I hadn't seen him in a movie in ages. Yeah. I mean, I didn't want to say that. But.
Well, wiser.
He looked much wiser. He was wizardly in his appearance.
Wizardly?
I don't know. All right, cool. Because they were saying that maybe he's the voice of Dormammu, but I think Benedict Cumberbatch actually did the motion capture and stuff for Dormammu.
Did he do it? Wasn't that planned? Wasn't it only planned, but not executed? I haven't looked at the cast list for Dormammu.
No, it says in the IMDb credits, it says Benedict Cumberbatch for facial motion capture.
Oh, so he actually did that. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know who did the voice.
I thought it was just thought about in the development process to have him also play Dormammu.
All right. Okay. Well, that's cool as well. I mean, there's probably like some sort of underlying commentary there about how having the same actor play him means that Dormammu is the dark side and the dark personality of Doctor Strange that he needed to face in order to achieve his destiny. But anyway, I mean, that was cool. I mean, he's already got that motion capture experience from playing Smaug. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was cool. But, I mean, overall, I'm happy enough with the movie that I want to watch it again in 3D. So in terms of where it fits compared to the other Marvel movies, I think it's up there. I mean, I like it better than Guardians of the Galaxy, I think, the first one. I think it'll be in my top five Marvel movies. Because I think it's watchable. I mean, it had great action.
Of
it
course.
Had great humor.
Of course, it's watchable. It's a serviceable movie. I don't want to say anything against the handwork that went in, because it's a competent movie. It just didn't rub me the right way.
Right. So for you, it kind of met expectations, but didn't really like exceed your expectations. How would you place it that way?
I don't know. You know, with Winter Soldier, Civil War, and Guardians of the Galaxy, we got such good and interesting movies. Even Ant-Man was really a breakout thing. It probably. It's in my top 10 of the 14 movies, but I'm not sure if it'll make top 5 if I won't put the first Thor up there and make it 6, 7, or 8. It was a good movie, but with the later movies, especially with Winter Soldier and Civil War, it lost a lot of its luster.
Yeah. I mean, Thor 2, I think on the bottom of the list for me is Thor 2.
Yeah, Thor 2, yeah, definitely.
The first Captain America, so.
Really, the first Captain America?
Yeah, I really didn't like the first Captain America. I mean, everyone there kind of felt like they were awkward and didn't know what they were really doing. Even Hugo Weaving was like, what is this? You know? It was all over the place. The first Thor I really liked, I mean, that was directed by Kenneth Branagh. It had this Shakespearean kind of feel to it. It was set in this kind of exotic Asgardian world. I really liked it.
Yeah.
I want to spend more time in Asgard. Like, that's one of the things that I miss about the Thor movies in general is that, you know, we just need to spend more time in Asgard.
Yeah, because
I just love, I love the City of Light or whatever they call it.
Yeah. Especially the design of it is amazing with that giant thing floating in space.
Yeah, it looks like a giant pipe organ.
Yeah.
It's the main palace. Although we can all agree their shield system sucks.
Yeah.
I mean, who puts the shield generator in a place where it's so easily, you know, gets destroyed?
Yeah, you know, it gets placed where the plot demands it.
That's true. Fair enough. You know, I can't really fault them for that. after my big tirade about how that Dr. Christine needed to be in the movie. So. All right. Awesome. So, yeah, that's pretty much where we are with Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be interesting to see how the rest of it plays out now. So that's the next thing to watch.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking for. I'm looking forward to the next thing. Thor Ragnarok is the next movie in the list. Am I right?
I think so, yeah. So Thor Ragnarok, I'm not sure when that actually comes out, though. It's obviously next year, but I'm not sure exactly when. But I think maybe Spider-Man Homecoming comes out before that. I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah, we have... I completely ignored Spider-Man.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it... Like, how... I think Iron Man's going to show up in there. But in terms of, like, barreling now towards the Infinity War, I don't know how much of that will be in Spider-Man. So it's an interesting question, you know, if Marvel will let Sony have an Infinity Stone. So, because there's two unaccounted for, I believe. So we know where... four of them are, and there's two that have yet to surface. So who knows? So we've got a couple movies before that shows up. There's Thor Ragnarok, Spider-Man Homecoming, Black Panther. So
oh, we have Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
And Guardians
2. It's the next one in May.
Is that the next immediate one?
Yeah. Spider-Man in July and Thor in November.
Oh, wow. Okay, so that's 2017.
17. And then February 2018, Black Panther. And Infinity War in May 2018.
Wow. So.
Oh my God. It's 2 years.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the plan was to go to like 2020, right? That was the Marvel 2020 vision or whatever. Even 2021, depending on. Because Infinity War was two movies, and then there was two movies in between the two Infinity War movies. So let's see. We've still got a long road ahead of us.
Yeah.
Exciting times.
It's amazing when you think about it.
Yeah. I mean, I always say, I mean, when I was a kid, when I was reading these comics in the first run through, I never thought we'd get to a stage where all these movies are coming out. So
no,
I'm still waiting for everyone to get completely sick of them, but I'm still excited for the time being.
Can you remember the times when we thought, yeah, we'll never get that Avengers movie? You know, there will be a massive drop of your money at some point. And now we got two Avengers movie and like a slate till... 2018.
I know. It's amazing. I mean, the fact that the Avengers, I mean, even Doctor Strange, where we are now.
We got a Doctor Strange movie of all things.
Yeah. Because they weren't even the most popular characters from a comic point of view, you know? They weren't the biggest selling books that Marvel had. So we you know, there were lots of iterations of bad comic book movies before this. So we had bad Spider-Man movies and, I mean, bad Superman and Batman movies as well. And so it was like, I would have never thought that, you know, if you told like 13 or 14 year old me, this is what it would look like in 2016, I probably wouldn't have believed you.
No.
I would have been super excited, but I wouldn't have believed you.
Yeah, me too. Well, Doctor Strange, we got Dr. Mordred, the movie that's basically a Doctor Strange movie, but the license fell through and they made it anyway.
Really?
Yeah. I got it on Blu-ray somewhere.
You got us a Blu-ray of this thing?
Yes. I bought it with Swamp Thing at a sale, but I haven't watched it yet.
Right. What year was that?
Dr. Mordred, 1992.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, hey, all right. I'll look it up, but I don't know. You can let me know if it's worth watching.
No, probably not.
Not compared to what we currently got Doctor Strange. So.
I guess Doctor Strange beats that movie by far.
Well, there you go. That's the tip. Don't watch Dr. Mordred. Just go ahead and watch Doctor Strange. And in 3D. So
yeah, definitely in 3D. You know, from me, that's a big compliment for 3D.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, it sounds like that wraps up our Doctor Strange discussion. Any final thoughts from your side, Martin?
No. Oh, yeah. would have been interesting. I want to experience the alternate dimension where they made Doctor Strange into a series and where Daredevil got a second movie.
So, yeah, I mean, that is potentially, you know, they've sort of opened the door now to, like, the Ultimates universe, right? So we're going to, at some point, I'm sure, Marvel's going to go through a Secret Wars. So we're going to have all the different versions of all these characters from all the different multiverse dimensions coming together.
Couldn't you imagine this? Us in our 60s and Marvel does a Secret Wars movie event where we get, like, a movie every month.
Yeah, I hope we're still doing this podcast.
Yeah. It'll be amazing. It'll be a brain transmission then.
Yeah, who knows what the world will look like after next week, let alone when we're 60. So yeah, so I'll I don't know, I don't want to say anything more about that. But anyway, awesome. So cool, that was fun. Looking forward to the next big event movie. I mean, we got Rogue One, right? So
yeah, that'll be the next big thing.
That's the next big thing. Anything between, I mean, there's a movie called The Arrival, so it's a science fiction one. That's coming out soon. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to watching that.
Next week, I guess.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely on my list. So that's not my next big movie, but I guess the next one that we're going to be talking about will be Rogue One. So we're going to have to do a Christmas special.
And we have to talk about The Arrival as well. Because that'll be
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome.
It's on my list. I just forgot about it.
All right. Well, so we're going to save that for the next session. And we may have another shorter session like we had last time in between as well. So we'll definitely be back.
You'll be hearing from us, guys.
You'll be hearing from us. And yeah, if you have any ideas for season 2, be sure to let us know.
Yeah, astroidsandxl@gmail.com. So Niff and I can both read it.
Awesome. All right, Martin. I think that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. See you then.
And cut.
We're up. You know, when we do credits, we should mention some people or at least one person per movie that doesn't get mentioned usually, like the physical therapist on crew.
Really?
Yeah, I just found his name. David Higgins.
Wow.
They must have
done a great job.
Or the cashier who handed out the checks.
I'm just imagining like Benedict Cumberbatch and Tilda Swinton, like they're all lined up and the guy's giving out checks.
in full get up. And we should thank Mittal Patel for keeping the production secure. And we should thank Stephen Preston for keeping the internet up.
What's cool with IMDb is that, like, normally in the visual effects credits, right, they just list all the names.
Yeah.
But what's cool here is they actually show you what each person, what their role was. Like, VFX line producer, match move artist, junior editor, lead stereo composer.
They had an assistant marine coordinator. Did we have water in that movie? Did somebody take a swim?
In the the only water that I remember seeing was in the Hong Kong fight scene, when he's reversing time and they put one of the bad
girls in the
tank.
In the tank, yeah. Okay, I forgot that. I only remember the puddle after the car crash.
Maybe he was coordinating the puddle.